From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. Singer-songwriter Peter Holsapple celebrated the millennium earlier this month by organizing a concert called Songs of the Century. On today's Fresh Air, we'll be joined by Holsapple and two other members of his band, the Continental Drifters. Susan Cousel, who got her start in the 60s with her family's band, the Cousels, and Vicki Peterson, formerly of the Bangles. They'll perform favorite songs of the 60s that they sang at the Songs of the Century concert. Then Marshall Crenshaw will do two songs he performed at the concert. Also, linguist Jeff Nunberg tells us what words and phrases he'd like to purge from the language before we enter the new millennium. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. President Clinton is being kept abreast of developments related to last week's arrest of a man allegedly carrying bomb-making materials into the United States. NPR's Pam Fessler is at the White House.
Officials at the White House say that law enforcement and intelligence authorities have been working diligently to guard against terrorist threats as the new year approaches. But they say there have been no particular changes at the White House as a result of growing concern about possible terrorism in the United States. White House spokesman Joe Lockhart said the president is being kept up to date on any developments. He said the president has been closely involved in ongoing anti-terrorism efforts. Authorities are trying to determine why an Algerian man was transporting bomb-making materials across the Canadian-U.S. border and whether he is connected to a larger terrorist group. Security has been tightened at all U.S. entry points since the man's arrest. Pam Fessler, NPR News, the White House.
Police in Montreal are searching for links to Ahmed Rizam, the Algerian-born man who lived in Montreal and who may have been connected with a theft ring with alleged ties to Algerian extremists. Police suspect that the ring may have funneled money from its thefts to Islamic militant groups in Algeria and France. Police want to know whether Rizam had accomplices. Witnesses in Vancouver have said that Rizam stayed with another man at a motel for 3 weeks before he was caught trying to bring bomb ingredients into Washington state. After 2 days of political consultations, Italian President Carlo Azeglio Ciampi has tapped Massimo D'Alema, the outgoing prime minister, to try to form a new government. NPR's Silvia Poggioli reports.
The new government will be Italy's 57th since the end of World War II. President Ciampi accelerated consultations in the hopes a new government can be formed before Christmas. The previous government's collapse was triggered by the withdrawal of support from some junior partners in the broad ruling coalition of centrist and leftist parties. The crisis was a sign of the fragility of a system based more on political clout than on party loyalty. Since the last elections in 1996, nearly 150 members of parliament have changed parties. Some have shifted four times. And parliament is investigating charges that some MPs have been paid hefty sums to shift their political allegiances. Silvia Poggioli, NPR News.
A judge in Denver has sentenced a 21-year-old white supremacist to life in prison without parole for the murder of an African immigrant. Nathan Thill's first trial ended in a hung jury, but he avoided a possible death sentence by pleading guilty rather than being retried. Thill admitted shooting Umar Dia, an immigrant from Senegal, to death in 1997. On Wall Street, the Dow Industrials lost 113 points today to close at 11,144 in heavy trading. This is NPR. New York City has been dealt a setback in its efforts to close sex shops. The State Court of Appeals reversed two lower court rulings and said a Manhattan adult store did comply with new zoning laws. NPR's Melissa Block has more.
The store in contention is Les Hommes, a book and video store catering to a gay male clientele. To comply with a new city zoning ordinance restricting sex shops, the store added non-adult videos, so the adult portion of its stock fell below 40%. The city argued those videos were mere window dressing, a sham attempt to get around the new rules. But in a unanimous decision, the state's highest court disagreed. The seven judges ruled the city's guidelines set out the 40% content requirement and that it was not the court's role to, in their words, cast a wider net. The lawyer for Les Hommes said he was elated by the decision, which he predicts will have a wide impact on dozens of other pending cases. An attorney with the city law department said the city is looking at rewriting the guidelines. Mayor Rudolph Giuliani has made closing the adult establishments a hallmark of his tenure. Melissa Block, NPR News, New York.
The Connecticut Supreme Court has rejected the state's effort to stop banks from charging non-customers for the use of their automated teller machines. The state tried to ban the ATM charges using a 24-year-old state law that says banks may not charge any fees to non-customers. The court said the law was not written with ATMs in mind. Banks challenged the Connecticut ban, saying the fees are needed to help pay for the cost of installing and maintaining the network of ATMs. Two cities in California, San Francisco and Santa Monica, have tried to impose similar bans that are also being challenged in court. Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Archer Daniels Midland Company, bringing soy and a variety of soy products to consumers around the world. ADM Supermarket to the world. On the web at admworld.com.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. St. Anne's Church in Brooklyn has been the site of occasional concerts where contemporary singers and songwriters gather to perform the works of the songwriters that have most influenced them. Earlier this month, Marshall Crenshaw, Martha Wainwright, Beth Orton, Sandra St. Victor, and Jimmy Dale Gilmore gathered for an end of the millennium concert they called The Songs of the Century. The musical director was Peter Hulsapple. He's in a band called the Continental Drifters, formerly was in the DBs, and toured with REM. We invited Hulsapple and two of his current bandmates to come to our studio in New York and sing some of the songs from the concert. Susan Cousel got her start as the youngest member of the Cousels, the band the Partridge Family was based on. And Vicki Peterson is a former member of the Bangles. Their band, the Continental Drifters, has a new CD called Vermilion. I want to welcome all of you to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
And how about starting with a song? Why don't one of you introduce the first song for us? Tell us why you've chosen this as one of the songs of the century.
Okay. The first song we'd like to do for you is Be My Baby. I think this is a song of the century specifically because it evokes a time in pop music when things were pretty fresh and pretty exciting, this sort of pre-Beatle world in New York. And I don't know, it struck me as one of the songs to celebrate having been living in this century for. So we'd like to do that one for you. And Susan's going to sing lead on that.
Okay, and I'll mention this is the Ronettes had the hit in 1963.
Right.
The song is written by Jeff Barry and Ellie Greenwich.
Two wonderful, wonderful songwriters who continued on for years and years and still are doing stuff, which is very cool. So we're going to do that one for you.
The night we met, I knew I needed you so. And if I had the chance, I'd never let you go. And since the day I saw you, I've been here waiting for you. You know I will look for you till eternity. So won't you please
be my
little baby.
Ooh.
So won't you say you love me? I'll make you so proud of me. People will turn their heads every place we go. So won't you please
be
my little baby? Just say you'll be my darling.
Be
my baby now. Whoa. So won't you please
be
my little baby? Just say you'll be my darling.
Be
my baby now.
That's great. That's the Continental Drifters, Peter Holsapple, Susan Cowsill, and Vicki Peterson, and a song inspired by their Songs of the Century concert. Peter, you were organizing the Songs of the Century concert. What was the origins of the idea?
Well, I've done music directing for programs at St. Anne's, the Arts at St. Anne's, for 2 years prior to this. I did a tribute to Nick Drake called Brighter Later, and then we did one last year with the Continental Drifters as the backing band called Listen, Listen, the Songs of Sandy Denny. And we were trying to come up with something this year, and we were thinking about, well, what would be a good thing? And you know, obviously we're at a time in the year when in the century and in the millennium where people are looking at the ends of things and trying to see what's mattered. And we decided we'd make it something slightly more open-ended, so we called it Songs of the Century rather than Greatest Songs of the Century or Our Favorite Songs of the Century or What Billboard Magazine Says is the Songs of the Century, that kind of thing. So it was decided that we would try to do it on a kind of qualitative basis.
So what are some of the songs that made it into the show?
Well, let's see. To start it off, we did Tower of Song by Leonard Cohen, which is a beautiful song. That's one that Janine had lobbied long and hard for to start the show, and it really made sense because it's a song about songs, and it's a song about singing, and it's a song about songwriting. And it's a beautiful song. I wasn't as familiar with that as some of his work, but Martha Wainwright sang that one and did a beautiful job.
Boy, did she ever.
Yes, indeedy. let's see, we did Town Without Pity by Gene Pitney.
Great.
Marshall Crenshaw sang that, and
it was amazing.
Thoroughly mind-altering. He also did Route 66, which we needed a car song, which that one kind of worked particularly well. Beth Orton did Every Time We Say Goodbye, the Cole Porter song, which was, another one of the things that we were trying to do was to take the singers out of their regular milieu and have them do songs that perhaps they liked but maybe were a little self-conscious about because it wasn't the kind of stuff that they're noted for. So we had her doing that. She did Love in Vain by Robert Johnson. She picked one, which was real interesting, too, which was Can't Find My Way Home by Blind Faith, which is a great song. And it's not, I don't think it's one that people ordinarily would have come to mind when they were listing the great songs of the century, but through no fault of the song itself, more that there are so many theoretically in front of it in the list of songs. So we got to do that one, and it brought down the house, which was very cool.
One of the nice things about the concert at St. Anne's that we did was that we all got a chance to catch up on songs that we either weren't familiar with or things that were sort of in the back of your mind. Things like Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? I mean, mm-hmm. What a classic, beautiful American moment in music and history, and it was performed beautifully. Marshall did that, right?
Marshall did that.
And
so amazing.
I mean, songs like that, which are, somebody's grandparents' favorite songs,
right?
Your dad
sang it, and you went, oh, please stop.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm wondering if there are songs that you know from parents or grandparents that you felt one way about at the time and feel differently about now. Like maybe you dismissed the songs in the time and realize now they're great songs.
I can say that for Buddy, Can You Spare a Dime?
Mm-hmm. Really? My parents weren't.
My dad always sang it.
Really?
His name was Bud. It was
a problem.
Oh, there's
that. Yeah.
It was just like, and he did it with a ukulele, and I really wanted him to stop. It made me nuts. And I completely gained an entire new respect for it. And plus, Marshall isn't as obnoxious as my dad was when he was doing.
Nowhere near it.
Peter, what about you? Are there songs that you used to dismiss that you now realize are great?
Well, you know, but coming into this concert, I thought, I don't really ever need to hear Summertime again because I've heard it so much. It's a beautiful song. Gershwin wrote a very succinct melody and a very short, gorgeous song. But we handed it over to Beth Orton, and she put a whole new spin on it, and we played it differently from versions that I've heard in the past. Dave Schramm did a really cool little guitar figure on it, and it kind of had a nice little spiritual rebirth for me in there. That was one that comes to mind.
My guests are three members of the Continental Drifters, Peter Holsapel, Susan Kausel, and Vicki Peterson. They have a new CD called Vermilion. They'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. We're back with three members of the Continental Drifters, Peter Holsapel, Susan Kausel, and Vicki Peterson. Holsapel recently organized a Songs of the Century concert at St. Anne's Church in New York. Well, let me ask you to do another song for us.
Okay.
Another Song of the Century that you've chosen. You want to introduce it?
Yeah, I'd love to. This is a song that means a lot to me because it was written by Loman Pauling. And Loman Pauling was the leader of the Five Royales, which was a singing group that was popular in the 50s, and they were from my hometown of Winston-Salem, North Carolina, one of the great musical entities from there. And we've been doing this song. This did not end up in Songs of the Century, but it could very easily have, and it's just a gorgeous song, and everybody knows this song.
While I'm far away from you, my baby, I know it's hard for you, my baby, because it's hard for me, my baby, and the darkest hour is just before dawn. Each night before you go to bed, my baby, whisper a little prayer for me, my baby,
yeah.
And tell all the stars above.
This is dedicated to the one I
life
love.
Life can never be exactly like we want it to be.
I could be satisfied knowing you love me.
But there's one thing I want you to do, especially for me, and it's something that everybody needs. While I'm far away from you, my baby, whisper a little prayer for me, my baby. Darkest hour is just before dawn.
Well, there's one thing I want you to do, especially for me,
and it's something that everybody. Each night before you go to bed, my baby, whisper a little prayer for me, my
dedicated to the one I love. This is dedicated
to the one I love.
This is dedicated
to the one I love.
This is dedicated
to the one I love.
This is dedicated.
That's great. That was Peter Holsapple, Susan Cousel, Vicki Peterson, the Continental Drifters, singing Dedicated to the One I Love, one of the songs that they've chosen as a song of the century. And Songs of the Century was a concert that Peter Holsapple produced recently at St. Anne's in New York. The Shirelles had the hit of that back in 1961.
They did indeed.
And
the Mamas and the Papas also in 1966, I believe.
66 or 67.
Your band, the Continental Drifters, is interesting, you know, in the sense that, you know, the three of you are all songwriters, you're all singers, and your CDs alternate who's doing the songwriting, who's doing the singing. I guess that works really well for you. Some bands, you know, there's a lot of performers who would only work in a band where it was them fronting it, period.
We are so not interested, in being in that band, as I think a lot of us have been in that band.
Uh-huh.
And I have always enjoyed the community musical experience over the singular solo musical experience, because you're not sharing it, you're just having it, and that's never really felt as good for me.
It's such a vacuum in a lot of ways, being, you know, I'm probably the most recalcitrant solo artist that's ever come along. I'm much better, it just feels better with a band, you know, and especially a group of people like the Drifters, who are all best friends, and we watch each other's kids, and we rehearse, you know, in living rooms. We put the living room back in music, that thing that Emmylou Harris was talking about on Will the Circle Be Unbroken. We definitely bring the living room back into the musical fold.
Why don't you do a Continental Drifter song for us?
Okay.
This is a song off our new record, Vermilion, and it is one of several songs that sort of revolves around the world and the sensibility of water. And I'm not quite sure why that happens, but it just seems to happen in Drifterland. Okay, here we go. It's called Watermark.
And this is Vicki Peterson singing lead and writing the song.
That's correct.
There's a watermark, the tears are all dried and leaving a stain on an empty heart where nothing is right, ain't nothing like rain. Oh, and it falls down on me. Oh, and when it falls down on me. There's a man I know, he's keeping his face turned into the light. I can see the glow shine into the dark, shine into the night. Oh, and when it shines down on me. Oh, and when it shines down on me. Oh. Watermark, the tears are all dried and leaving a stain on an empty heart where nothing is right, ain't nothing like rain. Oh, and when it falls down on me. Oh,
and when it falls down on me. Oh,
and that's Watermark from the New Continental Drifters CD Vermilion, sung for us in the studio by Vicki Peterson, who wrote the song with Susan Cousel and Peter Hulsapple doing backup vocals.
Could I mention one thing?
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to mention that this is actually half of the Continental Drifters right at the moment, that we actually have very able members, Russ Broussard, Mark Walton, and Robert Mache, who are still sleeping.
Yeah.
Hopefully are still sleeping, but they are absolutely fully functional members of the mothership here. So.
Okay.
There's a lot of us.
Well, Susan, we just heard you singing backup vocals, and it seems to me you've probably been singing harmony your whole life.
I have indeed been singing harmony my whole life, which is probably why I'm the guy who doesn't want to be a solo artist in a band. I am programmed to receive other sounds and bodies next to me.
And in case any of our listeners are wondering if Susan Cousel is from The Cousels, the answer would be yes.
The answer is absolutely, eternally yes.
We were thinking of changing her middle name to Of The.
Or Susan, yes, that. Susan Cousel. Yes, that could be my middle name.
And we'll hear more about The Cousels in the second half of the show when Peter Hulsapple, Susan Cousel, and Vicki Peterson return. They're members of the Continental Drifters, and they have a new CD called Vermilion. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. Here's another song that was performed at the Songs of the Century concert called Dark End of the Street. This recording features the songwriter, Dan Penn.
At the dawn of the street, that's where we always meet, hiding in shadow where we don't belong, living in darkness to hide our wrong.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble, booksellers since 1873. Online at barnesandnoble.com, AOL keyword BN. From the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. From the Dial Press, publisher of Letters of the Century, edited by Lisa Grunewald and Stephen Adler. A collection of over 400 letters from famous figures and ordinary citizens chronicling our country's history. And from BeParticular.com, an online gallery of artwork by painters, sculptors, and photographers inspired by animals. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
I saw you sitting in the rain.
Coming up, more songs from the Songs of the Century concert performed by Marshall Crenshaw and members of the Continental Drifters. And Drifter member Susan Cousel talks about her family's 60s band, The Cousels. We're listening to them now. Also, our linguist Jeff Nunberg tells us what words and phrases he wants to dispose of before the new millennium. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with three members of the Continental Drifters, Peter Holsapple, Vicki Peterson, and Susan Cousel. They have a new CD called Vermilion. They performed at a Songs of the Century concert earlier this month, organized by Holsapple. Before we hear another song from the 60s that they did at the concert, let's find out about Susan Cousel's family band from the 60s, the Cousels, the band that the Partridge Family was based on. I have always wondered what it was like being in a band with your mother.
Oh, great question.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been asked that.
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
I've never been asked that specific. I've been asked about the brothers, I've been asked about the family, but I've never been asked about my mom. And I will tell you that it was, it is and was a very special situation because we did have, it was my mother and I against the men. And I think it bonded us in a way that mothers and daughters probably wouldn't generally be able to be bonded. We were musicians together. And awfully strange that I was 7 and she was 40, you know, and we were kind of doing, I don't know, we were sharing a musical experience on a kind of common ground at very different points in our lives and very unusual, I think.
What were the big gender splits about between the men and the women in the band?
Oh, just that they're obnoxious and endless, and we were little and wanted to be left alone, and did often go off and go shopping and leave the, you know, I, it was just lots of man energy, and mom was 5'2" and I was 7, so just kind of visualize, you know, 6 guys and she and I. But it was really nice. It was nice because we worked together. My mom didn't go off to work. She was right there, so she was kind of available at all times.
The TV show The Partridge Family was,
yes, ma'am,
was based on the real Cousels. Did you watch the show? And
I watched it every Friday night.
What did you think about when you watched the show? Did you want to be those people on TV impersonating you?
Oh, yes. You have no idea. We wanted to be them for sure. They had a lot of some of their scenarios were more appealing to us than ours were. I won't go into great detail about that. But, yeah, what was it like? The whole thing was so surrealistic. I can't count the Partridge. Watching our family show on TV on Friday night is anything weirder than seeing myself on a 16 magazine every day as I walked by the little music stand on my way to, or the magazine stand on my way to school. I was quite aware how bizarre the whole thing was while it was going on. So there was nothing really that stood out. The whole thing was like being in a dream movie thing.
I think that a TV writer had been sent out to your house to observe the Cousels for a possible TV series, which you never really had. But did you want that to happen? Did you?
I'll tell you, at the time, I wanted everything to happen. I was having a really good time, mm-hmm. so I didn't care. I think my older brothers, the Cousels, at that, from time of conception of doing a show about our family to it coming to actually pass, probably 2 years went by, and they were pretty critical years because my brothers were growing up and becoming teenagers in the 60s, and the squeaky clean portions of our programs were starting to get kind of dirty. And they, you know, they were becoming young men, and we were pretty well into our career, pretty ready, you know, to not be together every single day. It was enough that we were on tour 9 months out of the year, and it was enough, you know, that we were playing and working together, but to have to, you know, be on TV together every week, I think it would have just made us crazy. And we're not actors. We, you know, we're musicians, and they found that out quite quickly upon their visit at our house.
Did you reach a certain age when you thought, I want to do things that don't fit the sensibility of the Cousels, or I want to do music that doesn't include my brothers and my mother?
Sure. I think I reached that later than my brothers. The sensibility of the Cousels, the band reached that conclusion somewhere around 1969-70. Unfortunately, the music industry and all the arrangements and agreements made did not facilitate my brother's musical growth, which is one of the reasons why it needed to stop, because the machine was running the musicians and the musicians were not running the machine, because the Cousels would have become a really amazing, you know, Americana rock pop band had they been allowed to do that. Me, I decide to go off into some other musical place? Absolutely not. I was on autopilot at all times. This is what I did. I didn't know how to do anything else. So I'm kind of something that's just constantly happening.
Just one more thing, Susan. What was it like for you, you know, after the Cowsills, when you were trying to establish yourself on your own as a solo artist or in bands, and people knew that you were from the Cowsills? Did that seem really cool to them or really square to them? What were some of the things you had to deal with trying to establish yourself in the post-Cowsill era?
Well, it really has never been a problem for me. I think it's been more of a hindrance to my brothers, and probably only in their minds. You know, I was young enough where I think nobody held me accountable for the themes, you know, the kind of music we were doing, because I was just kind of along for the ride. It was kind of difficult establishing myself as I didn't play guitar until about 7 years ago. I didn't write a song till 7 years ago. And I just didn't know what to do with myself, you know, as an artist. So I just went out and collected a whole new family, and now I'm happy right back where I was. You know, I got a record deal when I was 16 because I needed to quit school because I had never gone. And then the band stopped being a band, and they put me in the ninth grade and told me, now you're going here every day. And it just wasn't working for me. So I begged my mother to let me quit, and I would, you know, she said to me something like, well, what are you going to do, sit around and watch TV all day? And I said, no, Mom, I'm going to go out and do what you guys taught me to do, the only thing I know how to do. I'm going to go get a record deal. And I did. I had a singles deal on Warner's when I was 16. But I still, and the music is very telling of exactly how much I didn't understand about what I was supposed to be doing. I'm kind of a late bloomer.
What did you record when you were 16?
Oh, my God. I recorded... It might as well rain until snow, September. No, please don't. Rain Until September by Carole King. I did this ridiculous version of It's Too Late by Carole King. And then I did some horrible, like, dance song, like, Meet Me at the Cafe, Baby, or something. Really.
Never heard that.
Oh, my God. It was like, I walk on to the street, oh, babe. It was just horrible.
Wow.
It was terrible.
And
so that career kind of died rather quickly. I think one radio station in L.A. played Rain Until September. And then, you know, I just kind of wandered about the streets looking for another family band I wasn't related to. Yes.
Well, you're truly in a family band in the sense that you and Peter Holzapfel are married, and I know everybody in the band is really, really close.
We're very close, yeah.
Do you think you'll have your children singing with you at some point?
Well, Miranda's writing a little song called We Love You, Baby India. So, I mean,
this morning at breakfast.
This morning. So anything's possible.
Anything's possible. Great.
Yeah.
Well, my guests are Susan Cowsill, Vicki Peterson, and Peter Holzapfel, three members of the Continental Drifters. And Peter recently produced the Songs of the Century concert at St. Anne's in New York. And I'm going to ask you to close with another song from the Songs of the Century concert that you chose, Peter. And
okay.
Why don't you introduce it for us?
Okay. This is a song that I remember hearing as a kid on the radio and just thinking that it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever heard, and very succinct and very downtrodden and lovely. And I finally actually got to meet the singer, Skeeter Davis, several years ago when I went to the Grand Ole Opry with some friends in Nashville. And it was really, really exciting to me. And this is a song that Vicki's going to sing for us.
Why does the sun go on shining? Why does the sea rush to shore? Don't they know it's the end of the world? 'Cause you don't love me anymore. Why do the birds go on singing? Why do the stars shine above? Don't they know it's the end of the world? It ended when I lost your love. I wake up in the morning and I wonder why everything's the same as it was. I can't understand, no, I can't understand.
Why do these eyes of mine cry?
Don't they know it's the end of the world? It ended when you said goodbye.
Great, and I'm glad you got in a little recitation in there. There just isn't enough recitation in songs today.
I know, nobody ever does that anymore.
It also had a modulation, something that's very, very important.
Right. Well, a fitting song to do in a Songs of the Century concert as we end the millennium, and some people are really waiting for the end of the world.
You think?
Well, it's really been a pleasure to have you here. I really thank you all. Peter Holsapple, Susan Castle,
thank
Vicki
you very
Peterson,
much.
Members of the Continental Drifters. Their new CD is called Vermilion. Thank you so much for being with us.
We thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. We've enjoyed your show so much, too.
Coming up, Marshall Crenshaw performs two songs he sang at the Songs of the Century concert. This is Fresh Air. Singer and songwriter Marshall Crenshaw was one of the performers at the Songs of the Century concert at St. Anne's Church in Brooklyn. Crenshaw has a new CD called Number 447. He's going to sing a couple of the songs that he did at the Songs of the Century concert. Unlike all the songs we've heard so far from the concert, this next one is not from the 60s. But apparently all the performers knew and loved the song.
There was one song that everybody, most everybody, suggested. And that was Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? And I kind of got the job of singing it. So I think I'll sing it right now.
It's a great song. It's from the Depression.
Yeah, definitely. You can certainly smell that when you hear the tune. Anyway, it goes like this. They used to tell me I was building a dream. And so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, I made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower up to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, oh gee, we looked swell, full of that Yankee doodly dumb. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid with the drum. Oh, say, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al all the time. Why don't you remember? I'm your pal. Oh, brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, oh gee, we looked swell, full of that Yankee doodly dumb. Half a million boots went slogging through hell, and I was the kid
with the drum. Oh, say, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al all the time. Why don't you remember? I'm your pal, oh, brother. Can you spare a dime?
That's Marshall Crenshaw. Can you remember how you first heard that song and how your opinions of it changed over the years?
You know, I kind of heard it in passing up until when we started to prepare the show that we did. I had it on a Bing Crosby album, you know, just an album of tunes from the early 30s. But I was always a fan of the lyric writer, Yip Harburg. You know, I liked the songs in The Wizard of Oz, and then I saw him on the Tom Snyder Show in the 70s. And he was really interesting, you know. He was just a guy who knew a lot of things and had lived and was articulate. So then when I started learning that song to do in the show, it really hit me what a great, powerful song it was. You know, there's so much, all that stuff about World War I, and, you know, it's just really a powerful song.
Well, let me ask you to do another song that you did in the Songs of the Century concert.
Yeah.
And this was a Gene Pitney hit.
Yeah.
And it was a theme. Why don't you talk about it, Marshall?
Well, it was a title song from a movie called Town Without Pity, and that's the song. I just gave it away. But anyway, I'm not positive that the song was in the movie, because sometimes back then they used to have songs that were just exploitation type songs, like The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance is not in the movie of the same title. But anyway, the lyrics are a little hokey, but it's a really kind of profound song musically for the time, you know, for a rock and roll song for sure, with all those clashing dissonances and so forth. And I like Gene Pitney too. He was pretty quality, I think. So let me take a crack at it. When you're young and so in love as we, and bewildered by the world we see, why do people hurt us so? Only those in love would know what a town without pity can do. If we stop to gaze upon a star, people talk about how bad we are. Ours is not an easy age. We're like tigers in a cage. What a town without pity can do. The young have problems, many problems. We need an understanding heart. Why don't they help us? Try to help us before this great granted planet falls apart. Take these eager lips and hold me fast. I'm afraid this kind of joy can't last. How can we keep love alive? How can anything survive when these little minds tear you in two? What a town without pity can do. No, it isn't very pretty. What a town without pity can do.
Mm-hmm. That's Marshall Crenshaw performing the song that Gene Pitney made famous. And tell me what you love about that song. I love like that big, tortured, anthemic quality about it. You know.
Yeah, definitely. I like it because it's really a rock and roll record. You know, that break with the saxophones going. You know, it's a bunch of old, you know, session guys who hate rock and roll, but they're really getting it on, you know, and you can tell that he was in the room singing with the whole orchestra, and it's just the whole room is thundering with this crashing music, and I dig it, you know. I think that was a really good era for pop music and rock music, even though it's kind of unfairly maligned, you know. It was just before the Beatles. A lot of people write that era off, but it was great, you know. You had Roy Orbison and Lieber and Stoller and, you know, good stuff.
Marshall Crenshaw, so thank you so much for being here with us and for playing for us this afternoon. Thank you.
Thanks, Terry. Nice to be on your show.
Marshall Crenshaw has a new CD of original songs called Number 447. He'll be back sometime soon to perform some songs from it. Coming up, the words and phrases our linguist Jeff Nunberg doesn't want to cross over into the new millennium. This is Fresh Air. Some people have been making big plans to go to faraway places on New Year's Eve where they can be the first to greet the new millennium. But our linguist, Jeff Nunberg, is staying in the San Francisco Bay Area where he has some cleanup chores to do before he can ring in the new year.
Before we start with the carousing we've planned to greet the year 2000, let's clean out our linguistic closets of their detritus and deposits, the babble, balderdash, and bugs that rankle underneath the rugs, with solecism, slang, and slag, and sweep it all into a bag. Then, as the afternoon gets late, let's gather on the Golden Gate to dump the whole lot in the water and usher in a new word order. And with one stroke, bold and defiant, make English Y2K compliant. Let's lighten our congested cargo of business cant and corporate argo. We'll ditch proactive for a starter, and don't work harder, just work smarter. Lose sight of visions, goals, and missions, and pitch out value propositions. Synergistic or synergetic, either one gives me a headache, and the concept of convergence is in need of some submergence. Consign restructure to the void, and downsize should be redeployed. At least the next time we get canned, we'll have an idea where we stand. Let's lose win-win, that favorite phrase of all the Harvard MBAs, and cast on the outgoing tide the box they like to think outside, in hopes that in the coming age, we'll all be on a different page. It wasn't very long ago the internet was comme-il-faut, and only the most avant-garde had at signs on their business card. But now that even Aunt Estelle has got herself a URL and Vinny at the barber shop made millions on his first day pop, we've reached the point where talking geekish is starting to sound so last weekish. Emoticon and digerati aren't worth a wooden zloty. To portal, we can give the gate. Mindshare can go for tuna bait. And since you asked, IMHO, those chat room acronyms can go. And ere the sun sets, let us jettison newbie, netiquette, and netizen. Nor should we miss the opportunity to deep six virtual community. E this, I that, and without qualm, let's unplug everything.com. On literary critics' patois, I think we must declare a fatwa. It's hard to part with hegemonic, but in the end you'll find it tonic. And how much groovier texts are rendered when they're just sexed instead of gendered, and curling up at bedtime, who wants to be holding something nuanced? Of that chic expression pomo, I would just as soon hear no mo, nor any others of the host of vocables prefixed with post. We seem to be, for all our fears, still modern after all these years. I'm sure that ages hence will honor us if we stop cooking up new genres. Let's spare the coming centuries, prequels and rockumentaries, and pause not even for a comma before discarding docudrama. And ere the clock chimes, let us vow that critics 20 years from now will earn themselves an instant wedgie whenever they use taut or edgy. Before we can put on our nightcaps, we've other words to feed the whitecaps. Let's leave off calling rumors buzz and blow off anyone who does. Wake-up call is getting thin. Next year, we'll all be sleeping in. And anything you feel like sharing, kindly offer to the herring. And as we're chucking out the dross, make sure we don't neglect to toss those interjections, coy and clever, like, let's not go there and whatever. And while we're at it, do I gotta even mention yada yada? Arrivederci to excuse me. I fear you no longer amuse me. Farewell to duh. And apropos, let's say bye-bye now to hello. Now, as we watch the century go out, there's only one more thing to throw out. Let's cast onto the coastal shelf the word millennium itself. I'm glad to bid that one adieu. The fact is that I never knew if it should have one N or two. And as night falls on the Presidio, let's go home and watch a video to wait the century's final hour, that is, assuming we've got power.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist at Stanford University and the Xerox Palo Alto Research Center. You can read the complete text of Jeff's poem on our website, freshair.com. Fresh Air's interviews and reviews are produced by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, and Naomi Person, with Monique Nazareth and Patty Leswing. Research assistance from Brendan Noonan and Marie Baldonado directed the show. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. Additional support from Little Brown & Company, publishers of Fortune's Rocks, a novel by Anita Shreve, available in hardcover nationwide. And from Sisiv, building custom e-business systems for global 2,000 companies worldwide. On the web at CYSIVE.com. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Hey there, you with the stars in your eye.
On the next Fresh Air, Rosemary Clooney. We'll listen back with her to recordings that span her career, and we'll talk about her life. She has a new autobiography, Girl Singer, and a new companion CD. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Hey there, you on that high-flying